Rabbi Perkei Avot Mishnah Gimel. Antigonus is Socha. Antigone, who was an important man of the city of Socha, kibel Mishimon HaTzadik. He got the continuation of the tradition from the man named Shimon HaTzadik, who was the last remaining sage of the men of the Great Assembly. Shimon HaTzadik was Kohen Gadol after Ezra. And Antigonus, the important man of the city of Socha, he continued, he got his tradition from Shimon HaTzadik. He was accustomed to saying, do not be like servants who serve the master only for the sake of gaining a reward. But rather you should be like servants who serve the master not for the sake of reward. You serve the master because you love the master. Obviously he's referring to our service of God, our performance of mitzvot. A person sometimes performs mitzvot and he thinks, oh, I'm going to get so much good in the world, I'm going to get so much. He's saying that shouldn't be the purpose of our actions. Our actions should be out of love. We have to aspire to a level where our service stems from love. And at the same time, we also have to be God-fearing people. That's a balance. We need both. Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem. Because out of Avat Hashem, that's what's going to encourage us to perform more beautifully on the positive commandments. And Yirat Hashem, fear of God, is what's going to hold us in line, hold us in check with regard to the negative, to the prohibition, the commandments that negate, they prohibit us from doing certain things. If a person loves someone, they still might sometimes rebel. If a person fears someone, they won't rebel. If a person fears someone, they won't necessarily do things the best they can. They'll do things, but out of fear. So that's why when a person loves, then he does the best he can. That's why we need both in order to balance our actions. Yes?
Is there a connection between prophet,
like,
prophet,
and prophet? I don't know. It's a good question. It's worth checking. I don't know. It's a nice thought.
I don't know.
The word pras, he asked like this. That the word pras over here means a reward. And the word pras in Aramaic also means partition, something halved, yeah. And his question was, is there a connection between these two meanings? And I don't know. It's a nice thought, I don't know. We should look at the Rambam, my man is explanation on the Mishnah, could be he discusses it. I don't know. Yossi, the son of Yoezer, who was an important man in the city of Tzreda, and Yossi, the son of Yochanan, who was an important man of Jerusalem, they both learned by the previous two sages, by Antigone and by Shimon HaTzadik. Yossi ben Yoezer is Tzreda Omer. Yossi ben Yoezer, the important man of Tzreda, he used to commonly say, Yi beitcha beitmad l'chachamim. Your house should be where the sages assemble. You should aspire to be an important man in the community. If you're not going to be wise enough to be one of the sages, you should at least be important enough that the sages, when they want a place to gather, will value your home and want to gather in your home. And a person should aspire to be as close to them as he can to learn from them, even if it means that he'll get their dust on him, because you walk near a person, if you walk behind a person as they're walking in the dust, you might end up getting the dust on them. If they're sitting on the benches and you're sitting on the floor next to them, you might get dusty from sitting next to them. Bottom line, you should value what they have to say so much, he says, that it's worth getting dusty for. Yeah, Baruch.
Today we learn that we can sit in the Hashem's presence.
We can
sit into Hashem's presence. The question was, which I knew posed, was, do we wash our feet?
That I don't think it's directly relevant. In a few minutes we'll have question and answer. So we'll get to that. Remind me a little bit later. Okay? We'll have. Anything else? And drink their words out of thirst. Water is a drink that when a person's thirsty, so when it tastes good, a person's happy to drink it. When a person isn't thirsty, so he's not so interested in drinking it. Our sages taught us that when it comes Our sages taught us that when it comes to learning Torah, a lot of it has to do with attitude. You want to succeed in learning Torah? He enters with his medicine. He's not going to be able to learn. Even if he tries to learn, he's not going to retain what he learned. If a person comes in and he's thirsty, he wants to know. If his attitude is, I'm doing the greatest thing in the world. I'm going to get to learn about the truth, what the world's all about. If a person's excited and he wants to know, then he's going to succeed in learning. A person has to be shoteva tzamati v'hem, to drink their words in thirst. And this can work the way we just described. It could work a different way also. Sometimes a person learns and doesn't feel like he's succeeding. So a person has to feel success in order to want to continue. Most people enjoy what they succeed at. So a person has to balance his day a little bit, to have rays of shining light in his day, where he learns things that he enjoys, and he learns things that he feels he can connect with, and he learns things that he feels he's successful at. We can't spend all our day reading Medrash, we can't spend all our day reading philosophy, but we could scatter breaks during the day in our learning so that we do have those pieces that we enjoy, and hopefully that'll shine on the rest of the day until we could be successful in enjoying all of our learning, even the difficult Gemara or other things that might not be as palatable. Mishnah Hey, Yosef ben Yochanan Ishu Shadayim Omer, Yosef's son Yochanan, who is an important man in Jerusalem, he used to say, your house should be wide open so that people feel comfortable entering. Very often when I have guests, not from the Machon, people who are very, very bashful. Most guys from the Machon aren't so bashful. Baruch Hashem has a very good relationship, so guys feel comfortable coming. But sometimes I invite guys who don't feel comfortable coming. So I try to have the door open when they're going to knock on the door. Really? That when they come, the door's already open, so I can say, hi, you guys know my house. I sit, wherever I sit in the house, basically I'm near the door, so it's very easy. They come to the door, they see me, and come on in. Sometimes just standing there, knocking on the door, is an uncomfortable feeling for a person. That's the place where he feels most like a stranger. I'm knocking and asking them to let me in. So if they just thought that your house should be wide open, the yuanim nevetecha, and the poor should be comfortable in your home. So here there are two understandings in this verse. Either it means hire them. There's a poor person, instead of giving him charity, give him a job. Instead of taking a servant, take a poor person and give him a job. Let him have the job cleaning your house. Let him have a job doing something else in your home. The yuanim nevetecha, let them be common in your house. That instead of giving them charity, give them a job. A person gets wages that's honorable. He's making a living. Another understanding is the yuanim nevetecha, they should feel comfortable in your home. That when you give them something to eat, they feel comfortable. They don't feel like you're doing them a favor. They feel like they're one of the family. So of course, yeah, there's yummy children, come have some. They feel like they're participating, they're ben bayit. They feel at home in your home. So the yuanim nevetecha, our sages instructed that when we invite people in, it's not enough that we give them to eat. The way in which we give them to eat is all the difference in the world. And our sages taught us we should treat them, we should have them feel at home. The yuanim bnei veitecha, when you bring in poor people, they should feel comfortable in your home. Yeah.
Did the David's wife have no
problem
with this?
It's a good question. The Gemara records the following story about Hillel. Hillel was the Nasi. Very important person. He was the Nasi, he was the prince, he was the equivalent of a king in that time. There was a king, but there was also the Nasi, the head of the rabbis. And he brings in a guest to the house. And he asks his wife to bring out the food. And they're sitting at the table. 5 minutes pass, 10 minutes pass, and a half hour passes, and an hour passes, and the food isn't coming. So, at some point, after a long time, like she was supposed to have lunch ready for them, and the amount of time was longer than it would take to make lunch, she shows up with the food. So, no, it was a weekday. After waiting this whole long time, he turns to her BT, which literally means my daughter, but in their times it meant my beloved. What took so long? Why did the food only come now? So she said,
you
asked his wife why it took 2.5 hours to bring out lunch.
In the presence of his gift.
I don't remember that it records whether the guests were present. But I think that it was such an unusual amount of time that he knew that the answer was going to be one which she wouldn't be embarrassed. Listen to the answer, you'll see. So what did his wife say? You remind me of a story, I'll tell you in a second another story. His wife said, I had all the food ready, like we agreed, and as we were sitting here, a poor man came to the back door, and he said he didn't have what to eat. So I gave him all of the food, and I made it from scratch. And that's why it took so long. That's why I said it was not Shabbat. It wasn't Shabbat. So he blessed her. And our sages say, we see from Hillel how patient the person has to be in his home. And not, hey honey, where's the food? I'm sitting here. It's already 25 minutes. You know, I got to get going. We have a guest. No. After she shows up, after 2.5 hours, then he asks her, hey, by the way, what happened? And he asks her lovingly, and she answers, and she has a good answer. You guys see me when I'm walking in the street, on the sidewalk, so I'm usually listening to an MP3 player. I'm listening to classes mainly by Rav Herschel Schechter. So he quoted that one, Rav Herschel Schechter from Yeshiva University. Schechter. So today I heard he quoted the following story. He said when he was a young man, he once went to the neighborhood where Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was his teacher, used to pray. And after prayer, Rabbi Soloveitchik introduced him to his wife. So his wife said, so Rabbi Soloveitchik said, maybe he'll be happy coming to us for the meal. It was Shabbos day meal. So his wife said, no, I don't think he'll be so happy eating with us. He'll be happier where he's at. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, no, but maybe he'll really enjoy having the meal with us. So his wife said, no, I really think he'll have it better where he's at. And this went on back and forth and back and forth until finally Rabbi Soloveitchik won and he came. And he's thinking all the way there, what's going on? Why is Mrs. Soloveitchik so mean? She's a nice person. Why doesn't she want me to come to the meal? Doesn't she know? Want me to come to the meal? Doesn't she know that the most important thing for me is to be when I'm ready for a meal? I can see what things that he does at the meal. And then they get the one place, and the wife is walking in one place, and the Rabbi Soloveitchik's house, and there's a small square table. Rabbi Soloveitchik sits on one side, his wife sits opposite him. They sit the first chapter on one side, and opposite him is sitting a girl. So he understood what the conversation was all about. Rabbi Soloveitchik was saying, maybe he'll want to come with us. Maybe that girl is for him. Set him up with the cow, he's better off. That girl is not for him. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, no, maybe he's better off coming with us for the meal. And his wife kept saying, no, I'm telling you, he's not better off coming with us for the meal. And finally Rabbi Soloveitchik won. And he records an interesting thing, that the next day he said this over to a professor, and the professor told him, he said, you know, maybe you should consider what Rabbi Soloveitchik is saying. I judge statistics that I think it was 60-70% of the people who propose, the girl doesn't refuse. So date the girl and propose. You have a 70% chance of succeeding. He didn't marry the girl. But this goes to what Baruch was saying, that we can't understand the codes between a husband and their wife. I feel that people misjudge. People think they can judge what's going on between a couple. And you can't judge. You don't know what's going on. When a husband says one thing and a wife says something else, you don't know what they mean. I was once present when...
How is it possible to get tuned to yourself?
Hey, with time, you develop your own language.
But I'm saying, what I'm asking is, we have so many differences. So many, not bad.
You look for someone who's as aligned as possible. That's what you're looking for.
Within
reason, a person searches for a spouse that's as similar to them as possible. Within reason. So,
but the question is, let's say you find a spouse.
I think we've digressed too much. I didn't exactly follow your question. So let's later we'll have, I hope we'll still have time for question and answers. We'll try to deal with it. So the question was asked, how do we get to all this? The Mishnah states, the Yonim Bnei Veitecha, that the poor should feel welcome in your home, according to the understanding that when the poor actually come in, they should feel welcome, they should feel like one of the family members. The question was asked, how does your wife take to all that? So I don't think it means that they have to walk into the kitchen and grab things out of the fridge and take the stuff that she was about to eat off her plate. That's not what we mean, but we do mean that they should feel comfortable asking for seconds and feel comfortable in the home, feel comfortable like they're one of the family. And obviously this has to be done with the way I don't feel comfortable with that person present. And then you have to think whether you can invite that person at all. You definitely have to minimize. She has a right in her home to the extent that you have a right. She could even say, I don't want your parents to set foot in this house. Wife has a right to the house. So, obviously this is done in unison with the wife. The Yonim Bnei Veitecha, and then the poor are supposed to feel good in one's home. Yeah, David. Yeah, say enough stories. Continue. Al tove sicha ima isha. And the Mishnah tells us, al tove sicha ima isha. Person shouldn't be spending a lot of time with just schmoozing with a woman. The ishtom one, we're talking about his own wife. Kal vachomer b'isht chavarot. Certainly his friend's wife. Mikan amru chachamim.
When you see schmoozing.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, we find ourselves talking to women.
One second, let's finish the Mishnah, try to understand it, and then see if we still have a question. Okay? Mikan amru chachamim, from here our sages taught us, kol zman she'adam marbe sicha im ha'isha, any time that a person speaks too much with a woman, gorem ra'a la'atmo, is harming himself, v'otel medivrei Torah, and he's standing there talking to a woman just because he enjoys it, not for any purpose, so he is at that time he's stopping himself from the words of Torah, and ultimately he'll inherit perdition, Gehenim. Notice that the Mishnah said al tarbe, one should not have a lot of sicha im ha'isha, with the woman. What's the Mishnah talking about? So the Mishnah means that there's a certain amount of talk that every couple needs to have. When I got married, so I went to rabbis, biggest rabbis I could find, and I asked them, how much time should a couple spend talking? What's the right amount of time? Give me a formula. So the answer I got from everyone gave me the same answer, was as much as they both need. Now need, not for the fun of it. Hopefully, a normal person, once he reaches the teenage years, he feels a need to talk to someone about the gender. But that need could consume a person's day. He could spend all day talking to someone about the gender. That's not what a person needs usually. Usually a person needs a certain amount of time that he needs to speak to his wife, tell her what's going on in his life, hear what she has to say. She has to tell him what's going on in her life. They do have certain needs, and that amount they're supposed to talk. That's part of what couples owe one another. It's part of what takes place in a relationship. But then they're talking just for the fun of it. That one is not supposed to have a lot of. And certainly with one's friend's wife, a person is supposed to minimize conversation. This is something that every person has to be careful with. Everyone. And women should know this as well. The Gemara records that student once asked Bruria the directions, and he said, how far is it to such and such a place? And she said, you amaret, you fool. You're a fool, you're not a learned person. So he said, what did I do? So she said, you used two words too many. Why didn't you just say to such and such a place? I mean, how far is it to get to such and such a place? You're just schmoozing with me. You're talking to me for the fun of it. That's not the way you talk to a woman. So Bruria, Rabbi Meir's wife, Rav Chista, Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion's daughter, she was on the level. She's quoted in the Mishnah that when a student tells it two extra words, she says, are you fool? That's not how you talk to a woman. But it should give us perspective that a person is supposed to measure his words. And I want to stress this point a little bit, because people ordinarily think, well, what am I? I'm going to mess around with my neighbor's wife. So you have to know that the nature is such that a person can never trust himself. And not only can a person never trust himself, but we know, Mayim Gnuvim Yimtaku, King Solomon taught us that stolen waters are sweeter than the waters you have at home. Whenever something is forbidden, then it seems sweeter. And beyond that, it is very common that people feel that someone else's wife is more pleasant than their own. Someone else's wife is always nice and pleasant and calm and smiley, etc. Why? Because he's not living with her. His wife looks that way to his neighbor as well. When you live with someone inside the house, then you see them when they're not that way. When you're when all you see is when they go out with the kids and they go out, so then it seems that way. So when our sages warned us that with one's own wife, certainly with one's neighbor's wife, so with one's own wife, so we said a person is obligated to talk a certain amount, but with one's neighbor's wife, one has to be extra careful. A person should watch himself. I can tell you that I deal with shiduchim, so I don't say this. I won't take that as an insult, Bara. one of the things I try to do is as many conversations with girls that I could throw to my wife, I do. Because I have to sometimes talk to girls because I have to set them up with a guy and tell them about a guy and find out about them. But you know what? It's not an ideal situation. It's not the way I would like it to be. I don't want to be sitting there talking to girls. If I have a better way to do it, I would do it. And when I do have a better way to do it, I do it. But a person has to try as much as he can to minimize it in every way he could. That's why I often I ask guys if they're married, if they ask questions, the wife should preferably pose it through them. Why should I talk to her? Sometimes there's no way out. He's not going to give an accurate picture of the question. He doesn't begin to understand what happened in the kitchen. Or he's going to add his own interpretation to what happened with the meat and milk, etc. Or other things. So sometimes you have to talk to the woman. But our sages guided us, and no one is beyond this. A person can't say, well, I'm okay, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't work that way. Even if you think it doesn't bother you today, how do you know what it's going to be like tomorrow?
So nah.
That we have to test an answer session? It's a good question, but the answer is going to take longer than doing another thing.
What
would
you teach in
the with regard? Yeah.
So, let's say your friend who just got married invited you for Shabbat, and the three of you, you totally ignore the wife?
That's a very, very good question. So, That's an excellent question. I meant to deal with that. That's an excellent question. How? Of course, that happens. I mean, guys very often when they come to a home, so they want to show their gratitude to the woman, and it's right to show the gratitude to the woman, but there's a modest way of doing it. I can tell you that we once had a guest. He learned a lot. It was a pleasure. And listen, I'll tell you.
How do you know this?
I'm telling you right now. So when he said his Dvar Torah at the table, he was careful that when my wife wasn't at the table, he'd say Torah one way, and when my wife showed up at the table, so he didn't turn to her and talk to her. But when he spoke to me, he said everything, explaining every concept. And he wouldn't say a concept that anyone who learns Gemara knows, but a woman who doesn't learn Gemara doesn't know. So when he's talking to me, so the jargon includes a lot of Aramaic and just quoting things Gemara. But the second my wife was at the table, so she's listening to Divrei Torah too, so his whole tone changed, everything, now he's explaining everything. Every Dvar Torah that he could have said in 1 minute now took 10 minutes. But I appreciated it. I said, that's a nice person. He's acknowledging the fact, my wife's at the table, she's going to listen to Divrei Torah too, why shouldn't she enjoy it also? Why shouldn't she understand? So a person can find ways to be considerate without breaking the laws of tzniut. And there's nothing wrong with responding, or if I had times when I was a guest and I said it's Dvar Torah, and the woman asked me a question about what I was saying, so I answered, what can I do? She asked me a question. We're not saying you're not allowed to talk to a girl. We're saying a person is supposed to minimize it. So when it's shayach, a person is supposed to compliment and say, you know, the food was delicious, thank you very much, I appreciate that, this was amazing. There are things that are appropriate to be said. But what we're saying here is the person is supposed to minimize the amount of idle with speech that's just without a purpose. Like a person shows up at the checkout counter and there's a girl behind the counter and he says, what do you think about what's going on in the news today? Now that's really just talking for the fun of it. So that's what we're talking about, and we're not talking about on a date. On a date, so then idle chatter has its purpose. You have to hear how idle chatter goes with this person and what they have to talk about. We're talking about where it's not for the purpose of dating, and it's not his wife, and his... I didn't say anything. The Mishnah said that a person who the Mishnah said that when a person
on the fact of community, speaking to those, looking at me, is the fact that I'm trying to refrain from walking behind demons and rather walking alongside them. The fact that you can't speak to a woman
excessively,
that poses a problem.
Why, you have to ask her what she thinks about the moon.
Why not?
If she's a girl you're dating, so then that's part of the dating. If it's a girl that you're not dating, so then we say that a woman is supposed to be close to one man. A man is supposed to be close to one woman. And this type of conversation is a breach of that.
Let me take this example. I am not the place where you are.
I'm not talking about me.
Where, I'm not in the place. I'm saying, no, I need to, be in contact with women. Doesn't matter. But how do I do this on the basis of you?
That's a very, very good question. I think it will be addressed most fairly if it's one-on-one. For the sake of the question, I mean, it's something that you're right, but that's really individual. Each person should speak to his job, and if you want, we could talk about it. Getting back, remind me what we were discussing, David? So what the Mishnah says is that people sometimes think, what's wrong? I'm just talking. What did I do? Did I touch her? I didn't do it. I just spoke. The Mishnah says doesn't work that way. But it begins with that. By speaking idle chatter with someone, you're getting closer and closer to the person. Mitzvah Hashem, on Sunday, we're going to learn the Gemara about Bruria, the famous woman Bruria, and a story that happened with her that illustrates this point, about how through just talking to a person slowly, people do get closer and closer and closer, and whether you like it or not, that's what happens.
So the intercourse, when a woman is pretty not married, that leads you to Gehenna, but not talking.
We say that ultimately it'll inherit Gehenna. It'll bring it to the
beginning. Does that happen most of the time?
Read the news. The news doesn't report every time the statistics that nearly 50% of couples the husband admits that he's cheating on his wife. I don't know how many are denying it when they're really doing it. There was a statistic I don't remember where I saw it, but it's high, I think it was of husbands are cheating on their wives. And that's in the U.S. We're not talking. Okay, let's try to get one more Mishnah. Which question? So we'll get to that. So we'll stop our Mishnah note here, and.